Hey, going back in. Got a second? Okay, call us back to order. All right, come on forward, Bob, let's.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I guess I need to stick into the phone, right?
Well, you're being recorded, so you have to sit or go. Yeah, want to have a seat? And just state your name and who you're with for listening audience. We don't have any. Oh, we have mints.
One tomato left in the box.
Mints and a tomato.
I'm Bob Hamilton, so I'm the director of the Tall Grass Prairie Preserve with the Nature Conservancy up north of town here. We've been, you know, involved in the wind struggle, as I would think about it, for several years now, dating back, well, Chris, however long has it been, Chris? I don't know. It's been years. I guess what I thought I'd bring to your attention, it's just kind of a new tool that we just rolled out here recently in the last month or so. The Nature Conservancy, you know, we're an international nonprofit conservation group. We're science-driven, and so we try to be objective about determining what ecosystem types, what species, what should be conservation targets, you know, what are things of concern out there. So science informs us, kind of peer-reviewed literature, all that kind of stuff. Good hard science informs us what we should be focusing on, where we should be working, strategies, things like that. I think of us as kind of the real estate arm of the private conservation group. So we're a private nonprofit group. So we typically don't get involved in political struggles and things like that. We focus on specific places, the specific species and ecosystem types, try to figure out how to work with partners to protect those. So this product is really kind of bringing that location perspective to the table. And in particular, we tried to, frankly, through the years, we've tried to engage with wind developers to bring, you know, to basically offer the science to them. And frankly, we've had mixed results with that, of course. We met with the wind developers locally here a little over 10 years ago, back when they were first starting to think about their projects. And, you know, not that we know everything, but apparently the information we offered kind of fell on deaf ears, I guess is what it said. This product is a strategy now to instead try to engage the power purchasers. Kind of, you know, a good capitalistic approach, the power of the purse. If you can influence the buyers out there, that can have tremendous power. And so this is a website you'll see. I think it's on the down here at the bottom of the last page, but the nature.org/sitewindright. And so it's a GIS-driven tool, available to the public, available to anybody. You just log on to that website, and you can drill down through all these different layers, but it's an effort to pull together all the existing science on all the species of kind of the southern Great Plains region, Oklahoma, Kansas, and the panhandle of Texas, so kind of a southern Great Plains perspective. Where are the most imperiled landscapes in terms of ecosystem types? Where are all the species? Not only looking at prairie chickens, but also bats and other endangered species and things like that. Really trying to pull it all together in one easy site, rather than wind companies having to go out there, developers having to go out there and cherry pick all this information. Can we bring it all into one pool for them, make it easy? And the result then is, if you look at page 3, the green and white map. Essentially what this means is, if you want to develop, and the green means go. Green is good to go. Green is where there are less environmental conflicts in terms of conservation. And you'll see that, you know, the Flint Hills and Osage Hills of Oklahoma, Kansas are not green, because the tall grass prairie is so special, and, you know, less than 4% of it remains, and the last big chunk is right here. So Mr. Wind Developer, if you're thinking about developing, you really need to avoid that area, because it's not truly green, you know, in that respect. But gosh, look how much opportunity there is out there. And if you do the math on that, and this walks through it, if you do the math on that, one of the criticisms you hear from developers and others is that, oh geez, you know, if we get too politically correct about this stuff, where can we build? You know, there's nothing left out there. Well, actually, if you do the math on this, if all this was to be built out, if all the green was to be built out, that would be 25 times the gigawatts that the Department of Energy has set as a goal for 2030. So there's many, 25 times the federal goal for this geographic area you could still produce in terms of industrial wind power. And so it's kind of a, again, what we're trying to do is influence the power purchasers. And so what we're in the process doing right now is going out there and meeting with the wind industry. The very back page, you'll see one of the challenges is that much of the wind that's developed in this southern central Great Plains area is exported, most of it going east. Many companies on the East Coast and kind of the southeastern states have renewable energy goals. They have very little available wind power in that part of the country just because they don't have that kind of wind resource. And so increasingly you're seeing contracts signed from this part of the country that are shipping electrons to the east. And one of the things that Nature Conservancy brings to the table is that we have, in each of the 50 states, we have a board of directors, which tend to be the, you know, captains of industry type folks, political leaders, things like that. And so we are now engaged with our partner programs to the east and south and figuring out who are the players in terms of potentially buying wind power from this part of the country and trying to meet with those folks. And we've been actively doing that over the last month or so. We've had some good meetings with some folks in Florida and Alabama here recently, but basically just trying to make them aware of this tool that XYZ wind company, next time you put out a request for your proposal for 100 megawatts of wind power or whatever, this is something you might want to use for screening those proposals. You might even want to think about putting it in your request for proposals, making wind developers aware that, you know, in deciding which bid we're going to go with, one of the ways we're going to screen those proposals is kind of the environmental greenness of it. So it's, again, trying to influence the industry from a buyer end of things. And we feel like if we can get some traction there with the wind buyers, then the developers will start waking up a little bit maybe and taking a softer approach to this thing. So anyway, I just wanted to make you aware of this. It's kind of I think of it as a combination of conservation science and capitalism, trying to put those two together.
Thank you. Does the committee have any questions?
The buyers that you're describing now, have you done any, it's open for anybody across all social classes, it doesn't target one specific level of income, or there's no...
Well, who would do...
To everybody.
Who, in terms of the contacts, you mean?
The buyers, whoever purchased the power purchasers.
The folks we are engaging with are the larger power cooperative type companies in the southeast.
Not the end user. You're not talking about
And then they distribute to
anybody.
Yeah.
Florida Power and Light, those kind of folks, those are the folks we're trying to sit down and say, okay, here's the conservation science behind this, where the energy's coming from. And the way we're really trying to market this to the power purchasers, to the power distributors is reduce your risk. Reduce your political risk. Reduce your, you know, environmental risk. If you follow this approach, you're less likely to get hammered later on by the press that, oh, this, we just signed this power purchase agreement with a company to buy power from Osage, and oh my gosh, there's issues out there. How come somebody didn't tell us? And they get whacked on the head by the media. This is kind of a risk management sort of approach. You can reduce those risks by walking through this process.
In your opinion, with the well-documented approach to eco-conservation, do you really think they're going to care about prairie chickens, ducks, bats, anything of that nature?
The power developers?
Yeah.
Like I said, we've had mixed results with that. Some companies, we've had good luck with some companies. I know in Kansas several times where we've sat down with companies early in their planning process and made them aware that, ooh, where you're talking about building this thing, that's a tough site. You know, you're going to have conflicts. And they've modified those plans. Other companies, they just put their head down and forge ahead. But again, this is focused towards, at least initially, the power purchasers.
Does that have an effect on the purchasers too? If they know that where they're moving these things, where they're buying it from?
I think so. I think some of these, what we're finding is, and these are public utilities, and so they have, most of those companies nowadays have sustainability goals stated in their objectives. You know, they want to be green, and so this is a way for them to do that, or try to ensure that they're being green in terms of where they're buying, where their power is coming from. And the flip side of that is that they would be open to criticism if they didn't consider kind of the greenness of the project. Our position has always been, the Nature Conservancy is supportive of all kinds of renewable energy, but it needs to be truly green. And location, location, location is the first consideration. Where is that development going to occur, and what kind of impact is it going to have? And so I think the shorthand version is, is it truly green or is it dirty green? So we're trying to steer the industry towards truly green stuff.
So the power of public opinion is what you're really, this is focusing on as far as the big energy electric purchasing companies. Mm-hmm. And you made a statement too that, you know, trying to prevent them from getting whacked on the head by the press for mm-hmm. buying energy from a controversial mm-hmm. area. And I don't think that we've, just in our area, that we've been very good in really making it be a upfront month after month controversy here. We've kind of, we're sitting back, and I feel like that we need to be a little bit more proactive, because the next time it's going to be a controversy is when they start digging holes in the ground to put up new turbines. And so I think although I think this is a good approach and we need to approach it from every angle, we don't holler loud enough here.
Well, I think, yeah.
And so,
I mean, Osage Nation is the big player. And so that constant pressure is going to be critical. They're obviously still coming.
They're obviously still coming. And, so, you know, and the one thing I always like to go back on is I know that the Oklahoma Corporation Commission has in their regulations the authority to cite these big, ugly power lines. They can cite the power transmission lines. Mm-hmm. But I just so wish that we would lobby them to, they would have the ability to cite windmills, mm-hmm. but they don't in their regulation right now. Mm-hmm. Not that we want them to cite them anywhere in Osage County, but they act like they don't even have that authority to do so. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have them so close to the islands. Mm-hmm. It's just terrible. So I think this is a good approach. But we also need to be those people that are hollering about it all the time.
I think it takes multiple points of pressure.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. Thank you.
Hang in there.
Well, while we're still on, Chris, I had a question for you. If you listened to the recording last time and you referenced the Red Eagle Big Horse administration and the fight that they had against wind energy and it was lost, I never really got it clear, because there was an aggressive resistance, in my opinion. We were going against that, Ian Chavez and those people that we worked with from Washington, and never really got a clear answer of how that was lost. Do you recall
that effort?
Yes, sir.
It was there when I left, so okay. I don't know what happened after that. I can't answer for.
In your opinion, it was there when you left. In your opinion, when you left, were you pleased as an appointed position with Chief Redwood with the efforts that were going on with that case?
I was, personally speaking, in that position, I was pleased with I'm not sure freedom is the right word to choose, but at least my directives from the chief and how I was supposed to pursue those things, it was pretty much left up to me. And then I would report back to him and the assistant chief and sometimes even to the Speaker of the Congress and to the Minerals Council members.
I remember the maps we had that were put together, I believe, from the Historic Preservation Office that
they had
pointed eagles,
we had trails, you know, there were some things out there that we thought we might be able to take advantage of. First of all was that beetle. But there were some other items as well, and we pursued the, some of the, I don't know, some of those staff members from not only Historic Preservation, but the environmental side in that office. We pursued as much as that as we could. On the Historic Preservation side, I can remember having some conversations within the chief's staff that we thought a bigger effort could have been made on that. I don't know why it wasn't. And maybe that, maybe it wasn't a viable effort. Maybe it wasn't legit, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or feasible, I should say. I can't remember that much about it, but I do remember it being discussed, as, especially when Dr. Connor started bringing up about trails and camp sites and possible burial sites. And it wasn't just that area right there by the highway. You saw the map that I saw in the newspaper shows all of the Invenergy stuff up north up in the northern part of the county. Mm-hmm. And now you've got these others going all the way to McCord. It was frustrating because as I was visiting with the Jim, Congressman Norris, a while ago, it's a big old political situation. You've got a president of the United States that's big time on Wynn. Wynn Capital Group used to be the ones that started this. The CEO of that company, well, at the time, he was the owner of that company. He had Obama at his home in Missouri, St. Louis, I believe. I don't know how many thousand dollars a plate, a private dinner for him. So, and Obama's big time behind Wynn because Wynn's been big time behind him. They have an unbelievable lobbying effort. They still do. At the time, Cleta Dethridge was the president or the head of the American Wind Energy Association. You know, Dethridge has been involved in politics a long time here in not only Oklahoma, but in Washington, D.C. Big time money. Of course, they're talking about big time money with all of the production tax credits and the state incentives. There's no way the tribe can counter that money effort, but there's no way they feet on the ground, different kinds of sitting down and planning a strategy on how we're going to do this. Could it be a political strategy? I think part of it, I think there's some I discussed with him a while ago. I'm not going to talk about it online, but there's certain kinds of strategies that can be used. Take, for example, federal regulations. What the Nature Conservancy was a good partner with us in those years, and we developed a good relationship with them and learned a lot. Bob invited me and I went up to Kansas to two different meetings up there with the Nature Conservancy people and that are involved in the Tallgrass Prairie on the Kansas side. And there's regulations. What if these prairie chickens out here, greater prairie chickens here, right? What if they became like the lesser prairie chickens out across I-35, where they've lost a lot of the habitat and they're really scarce, and all of a sudden here comes the federal government saying, hey, we're about ready to put this lesser prairie chicken on an endangered species list. Then you had Senator Inhofe and all of the ranchers and the oil men all coming together and saying, we don't want any more regulations. You know how they are, we got enough. So that killed that effort, even though I think the lesser is on some kind of a list, but not as, it wasn't going to be as stringent as it was. What if that happens out here with the greater preaching? What happens with Cerisa Lespedeza? I think that's one of the bigger things that's facing this tribe right now, on its reservation. What is this tribe doing to fight that and to counter Cerisa Lespedeza? Are they assisting any of the ranchers that's trying to fight this? But if that takes over out there, it'll choke everything else out. Everything else will be gone, and the wildlife with it that has to go. But those are just some things that, you know, that the Congress can consider. So things that together with the executive branch work on and consider. It was mentioned, and this is what I say, it's a complex issue for y'all, but it was mentioned last week about environmental laws. And I know where everybody starts getting a little goosey on there, but you know, that's an issue that has to be set down and tackled. Some of that can help with these industrial complexes that's out on your reservation. I think they could. If all is lost, then maybe there's a taxation issue. If they're using your natural resources and they're down into your property, can you tax that? I don't know. I'm with the assistant chief when he said last week that you've got that part on the Minerals Council stuff, you know, where the taxation possibly could be. Forget about the air for right now. You know, that'd take a long time. But that's just my personal thoughts. I'm not any smarter than the next guy, and I'm sure no lawyer.
It just seemed like we had a lot of steam built up in that last effort in the horse riding administration.
Well, there was.
What happened to it?
There was, you know, I've talked to people since last week, and they're like, nobody's ever contacted us. Haven't heard anything. And I don't mean to come in here and to cast aspersions on the executive branch or the chief or the assistant chief or anyone else over there. There's a lot going on. I understand that. That's a decision. He makes those decisions. Chief Red Eagle made his, Chief Gray before him, and you know, they all make their decisions. That's why they're elected and put in those positions.
In your opinion, is the arrow pointing up on wind farm development?
Or
is
I'm sorry?
Is the arrow pointing up on wind farm development, or is it pointing down?
What arrow?
On the development of more wind farms. Is it going up?
I think so.
Yes, I do too.
You know, Oklahoma's one of the most prolific in the United States. It's like second or third in wind energy development.
It's so poorly regulated.
Yeah. And if you look at the whole situation from back, like when Enron and these guys started all of this stuff, way back then, if you look back at when wind energy started, this alternative energy stuff, I don't know who it was that first, he was smart. These people were smart because they go in and they get the government, whether it's at a federal or a state level, to come in and they set standards. To where these electric companies have to buy so much of their power from clean energy, mm-hmm. what they call clean energy. Mm-hmm. And so they get the government to say, okay, you're going to have to buy some power from these guys, and they tell you how much to buy, mm-hmm. and it's increased over the years. And then they get them to where the government's passed these tax incentives for them, mm-hmm. that they're so lucrative that sometimes they can sell their power even at a loss. of what it costs to produce that energy, they could sell it at a loss because those federal production tax credits cover that loss for them. And so what happens is that then it throws the market totally out of balance. And I'll quit talking. Yes, ma'am, thank you.
I was just gonna ask a question about the letter, so you probably wouldn't have the answer to it, Mr. White. It's for the questions for Assistant Chief, and I know this isn't your response, but the first question that Congresswoman Buffalo had asked was, are the wind turbines a priority of this administration, and do you all plan to get involved and be active in keeping up the good fight? And the answer is yes. Have you had the opportunity to maybe have any planning on this that you guys are going, where your efforts are focused, possibly?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of? Does he have somebody appointed to head up the task of staying on top of what the wind industry is doing here in Osage County?
I believe it's fair to say that the primary focus so far is the administration. And beyond that, I know that the chief fully supported Ms. Bradford and those efforts to raise public awareness. She helped organize the meetings that we had down at the Constitution and did a lot of promotion work that way. Since then, and with the exception of the recent developments with people, you know, signing leases, and obviously there's another harm going, the impact of the decisions in any further appeals on court cases, I think would have a major impact on how that would play out. I guess there's one way to pick what I'm saying is that we kind of wait on courts after fashion. Is there a public relations thing we can pick up, perhaps? But I have a follow-up question for the speaker. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the message I'll have.
Thank you.
You have a question for him?
The committee.
Oh, okay.
I have one down.
Yep. Well, I think that a first step that we could make as a nation is getting involved with the coalition that Dr. Connor had mentioned last week. And that's, you know, a good first step, I feel. He had mentioned that there are some other nations that are involved with that coalition, and that you know, several people feel like a way to, one of the ways to go into this is trying to lobby the lawmakers to, you know, stop the tax credits and make it not so appealing to these people that get into it for the money, not really the wind energy is, I think, how a lot of people feel. So I would love to have more conversations with executive on getting involved with the coalition, because I believe that it needs to be a funded effort that we are in agreement that we should be involved with the coalition and move forward. So just to throw that out there.
What I wanted to briefly discuss was something that Mr. White broached as a subject. I've been here through this whole thing. I mean, Chris and I sat at the same meeting during the Reagan administration over there. We talked about, are we going to wait around for see what the BIA does, or are we going to do something? And at the time, we rose up and started taking legal actions to help slow down or stop the development. Let me say, before I say anything else, that I'm not a lawyer, just like it's quiet, and I'm not pretending to be. But it seems logical that if each and every one of us at one time or another have uttered the words, I will protect the mineral estate, then that means that the executive branch, the Congress, and the Minerals Council should set aside our individual differences with each other about our government and other things, much as Mr. Pipestem urged us to do, and talk with each other and explore the possibility of truly protecting the mineral estate cooperatively with the Minerals Council through Osage law. There was a lot of I'm not going to go into detail here, but there was a lot of speculation during those first critical months of them going out there, heck with y'all, we're going to dig holes, we're going to do it the way we want to do it, and then just plow through the whole project. And there was a lot of discussion, but what are our options? Well, we can act under the under this power, we can act under this power, we can act, but everything was all tangential. Everything had to do with either federal regs or this court case or that court case. And I don't remember a single thing that we had in our toolbox that was us, that was here. Now, it is entirely possible, I'll be the first to admit it, it's entirely possible. One outcome of this is we do an exploration of legislative possibilities and it's a dead end. Or we can't, you know, our law that says you get a permit, and if you don't get a permit, we can send the Osage police out and stop you from getting in the mineral estate. There, I do know that there is federal law that, that allows tribes to do that. But we have to reinforce it. If we really intend to send the Osage police out there and drag a trespasser that's trespassing in the mineral estate into our courts and successfully prosecute them, which I think is a possibility, we got to quit talking about public relations and this plan and that plan or what somebody else is doing. Those are all good and those are all effective at the periphery. But I think what we're really talking about here is protecting the mineral estate through cooperative efforts of the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the Minerals Council. I don't know who leads on that. I think we're going to be honest with each other. We're all a little afraid to because it's touchy. It's always been touchy. But I think it's a little hard for us to put a lot of money and effort in all of these other areas that cost money and time and resources, and we have before us the potential to pass a law that puts a huge stumbling block in the way of these wind companies if they want to dig 50-foot wide and 20-foot deep holes in the mineral estate en masse and disrupt a lot of mineral estate. We can't harvest that rock that they poured underneath that concrete. So we didn't do anything with it. Well, how exactly do we get to it? The harvesting. It's a question of logic. I don't know who's going to provide that leadership, but regardless of who does, it absolutely requires the cooperation of this branch of government. I think that goes without saying. So, speaking for myself, I would really appreciate this committee and this Congress having a discussion about it, helping us or joining with us in exploring the legal possibilities. And come out with a yes or no. Yes, this is a good idea. No, this is a bad idea, and here's why. Because I think that's our first line of defense. And one in which we would be in as much control as we could exercise. Our resources, mineral estate belongs to the Osage Nation. We protect it for the rights of the shareholders. And we protect it with our police and our laws. If it's doable. Thank you.
Committee? Questions? Thank you.
Well, I have a question. How are we going to get all three of us at the table at the same time? I mean, we can, with that feeling like we're going to be stepping on somebody's toes whenever it's, you know, I think we know that we have the power to legislate. But then there's another party that believes that we don't have the authority or the power to come in and interfere with the running of the minerals branch. I mean, we've got to have a mutual understanding. You know, we're not here to take over anything. that we can just, I think what you're saying is we need to come to, we need to support each other and come to a decision on how we're going to tackle this problem.
Let me answer it this way, Congressman. If any one of those three entities objects to this, it's dead. I think we can all probably agree to that. If legislature objected, it's not going anywhere. If the Minerals Council objects politically, it's not going anywhere. If the executive objects, I don't think it's going anywhere. So somebody needs to ask the question, dance around it. I think it's time for a direct question to the Minerals Council from somebody, executive, legislative, preferably legislative and executive. Ask the question of them formally and publicly. Would you join us in exploring this possibility with absolutely no preconceived notion of how it's going to end up? Let's just explore it to see if it's a viable way to protect the Mineral Center. And then the ball's in the Minerals Council court at that point.
And would you agree that we don't have time to, I mean, as time passes, every day goes by, we need to jump on it real quick if we're going to do it.
I think you're correct. From the standpoint that I understand there's further developments. And I'll tell you my exact notion about that. If there are other developments planned, these are developers that are, they're not one-trick ponies. They're looking for different projects in different places and to do different things. And if they look at Osage and they see a small stack of obstacles to successful completion of the project, and there's a site B over here that's only got a small stack of possible objections. I think most businessmen are going to move over to the place where there's fewer objections. But I believe, it sickens me to think that an outside entity has disturbed the mineral estate and precluded us from fully utilizing what's out there. I think that's a low ball estimate.
Congressman Tillman.
Assistant Chief, I appreciate your work. It's your strong and powerful words, and it's to hear from an Assistant Chief, Special Chief, I do, because obviously what we tried in the past, obviously there's work. We felt
correct.
Miserable. So I do like what you're saying here, something has to get done, something has to get started. Well, we're going to have these things all over.
So. Let me talk to Chief about the possibility of getting with a few key members of Congress and talking about something that Congress, this committee and the Congress can review in terms of a combined message that we can all agree on, if we can do that. And something we can shove across the table to the Minerals Council and say, here, would you consider this? Would you consider talking, but not doing it, exploring it in a good faith effort? So I'll talk to Jeff and see what happens.
I mean, there's a lot that you said that I agree with. And I'm a shareholder. I'm a restricted landowner. I realize some people think to themselves, for whatever reason, you know, it's in federal law, it's in state law, that you can't do this or you can't do that. And I always think to myself, well, why can't we have an Osage Nation law too? Where is the harm there? There is no harm. But what we're really struggling with here is that when we say, well, this is in federal law or this is in state law, actually, when it comes to this issue, it's not. And that's the problem, is that there are no regulations when it comes to the state, when it comes to this specific issue. So, what do we have any control over that? No, we don't. I mean, we can lobby. Where our control is within our own house, our own government.
Thank you.
Our own laws, creating those laws. So I'd definitely be interested to hear from executive if y'all would like to move forward with that. I am in favor of moving forward with it and trying to talk with Minerals Council and seeing if they would support us having our own law to address this issue. Otherwise, we're going to have wind turbines all over the place. And they're already, they've affected one area. And maybe this will become a bigger issue for people if they're in Hominy and Pawhuska.
right outside their front door the way they are great horse. Right now, they're not. They're out and a few families see them, and the families that come from great horse over to Huska regularly have to look at them, but they're not sitting in harmony. I mean, we can see them at nighttime from certain areas, but they're not right outside of our door. And I bet if they, you know, get right outside of our door, then maybe people will take a more of a stand.
Did have one additional comment.
Sure.
I think one of the things that makes this attractive as a proposition is because it can be so narrow. I mean, let's all admit that there's a lot of fear when it comes, when you start writing legislation about any part of the middle of the state. We get that. Everybody here that's in politics gets that. But the beauty of this particular issue is it has to do with a very narrow subset of the middle of the state. It only has to do with one part of it. And it's a very easily identifiable part of it. So that to me is one of the pluses of the possibilities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, do we have anything further? Well, this is ongoing. As Chair of GovOps, I plan on putting this issue on the agenda this fall. I will stay in the loop with the executive on how we can try to move forward. Congresswoman Whitmore?
I see that we've had a few people slip in, and before we adjourn and move on, I'd like to see if anybody would like the opportunity to make comment on the wind turbines.
Yeah, I will. With the way we're set up with the minerals estate right now, and I'm a minerals recipient through the years, but are we at a standstill because of the fight that's going on with them about doing anything forward with the windmills? Because I'm at paperwork, meetings, what have you, have to go through them in order to come back over here. So where is our Minerals Council today?
They're not here this time. They were, we had set five members. Five of eight were here at the last meeting.
Right. Okay, the other thing is, I'm hearing a lot of different ones that say, if we can't beat them, we should join them. What is the discussion on that issue?
I haven't heard that.
Well, Joe Chish, remember, when he went back and he was talking with the Nell at that time, you know, he put in a, they had talked at one time, we all know that. Joe Chishwal with the Minerals Council, because he went to the Minerals Council and they all went crazy. You know, but what he was saying was, are we even working alongside them to tell them what we want or what has gone on? Instead of an attorney that doesn't have any history behind us talking to another country about us. But back to the question is, I think you all can say whatever you all want, but with the way they're tied up right now, it's not going to help me, and it's not going to help the other members of the tribe, I believe. So, until the Minerals Council can let go of ongoing, they're not even doing ongoing day-to-day function, because we have, like you've seen in the paper, like you've seen on Facebook, now Cynthia's done something else, you know. Going into it. Anyway, the stuff that follows these people is not allowing them to do any kind of work or work together the way I see it as a minerals person. I've not been to their meetings in some time, and I'll tell you the reason why is it's a clowning session to me. They don't get along. There's too many people in the audience that are just so bent against, you know, personalities. So my question still goes back to, you can do and represent and put things forward, but when it boils down to it, does the tribe really have any say-so, or is it the minerals that has to push it through?
Right. Well, I believe that the approach that they chose, that they tried several aspects, I believe, and I wasn't around when it happened, but I think they took several approaches, and I think they finally settled on disturbing the soils and a minerals issue. I think that they looked at fish and wildlife issues with our golden eagle and our bald eagles out there, but I think what really went to court was the disturbing of the soils.
Right.
So, and so that's the aspect they took it from. The nation has two.
Because we have a
department. The nation has lawsuits pending.
Yeah.
Also, still. So,
what I'm kind of saying is, until we can come together, all these side lawsuits is doing nothing but slow us down onto the big picture of what we need to do, you know.
And I think that's what this meeting's about. We're chairwoman's been putting it on our agenda. We're trying to get the awareness raised. And
then my only other thing is I'd like to see minerals here even secretarialized or someone that's taking notes for them or representation. Otherwise, to me, you all have got a good plan and a good thought going on, but right now they're fighting the nation, to me, and we can't do it as one. We've got to do it together as people. So.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kurt.
Michelle,
you have any? I think Kurt has pretty much touched on everything
Penny?
Yes. I have been in opposition of the wind farm from the get-go. I've worked with Chris, Bob, Assistant Chief. I have been part of the coalition team, still am. I'm sorry for my lateness and I didn't get to hear everything. But we do need to have a united force from all of the different components of the Osage Nation in order to make this work. We need to have a plan going forward. We've had a lot of great ideas and we've steamrolled ahead and then they've just kind of fizzled out. But I do have a lot of history and knowledge about what has taken place and I offer that to you guys as you move forward.
Thank you.
Thanks, Penny. Well, it is, let's see what time it is. 2:15. I've enjoyed the discussion. It seems like we were running strong here for a while. I agree with Congressman Tillman during the Reddigal and Big Horse administration. It feels like we heard about this a lot. There was a lot of movement and push and dialogue, and then somewhere along the line it kind of tapered off. But community members are the reason that it stayed alive. Especially the Grand Horse community, in all honesty. And they're the reason that they came to me and they said, will you put us on the agenda when you discuss the BIA compact? And I said, yes, I will. And so the last meeting we had was pretty lengthy. We went an hour and a half with, you know, discussion of wind turbines, which is why I wanted to have a second meeting. And so as chair, I will stay committed to putting this on the agenda and seeing how we can keep moving forward. And not just talk, but actually action. So at this time, I will move for an adjournment. So moved. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you,
RJ, for joining us, CFO.
Thanks for having me. Good meeting.
All right, thanks. Bye.
So, how are you? I'm curious.
Thank you.
I agree.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I agree with everything that